Good afternoon. This is Susan Gingrich, the Herb Lady. I live in Ohio, and for once, I'm home. So I'm talking to you today from the house. I got to spend some time in the garden this afternoon pulling out lamb's quarters and thinking I should tell you about lamb's quarters on the show today, because actually lamb's quarters, as although they grow really tall, are one of the best greens out there. So we're going to pick off lamb's quarters leaves and have those for supper tonight. It's only a weed until you know what to do with it. That's the definition of an herb is a useful plant. So the trick is learning what's useful and what isn't. Now, several weeks ago, I believe it was while we were traveling toward North Carolina, I touched on the use of pawpaw. And I got to thinking this afternoon that pawpaws are beginning to ripen here in Ohio. And this would be a perfect time to do a full hour-long show on pawpaw and its uses. It's an amazing herb. And we have discovered wonderful things about it. Now, before we get going with this, I want to be sure and give you some numbers. The toll-free number to call in is 1-877-876-5227. Once again, it's 877-876-5227. If you're in Canada, please call 888-810-8322. And if you're an international website user, please call 530-876-3222. All right. And you can please communicate with me by email. Right now, our website isn't particularly, there's another place you can go to. My email address is ngingrich, G-I-N-G-E-R-I-C-H, at cinci.rr.com. And I'd love to know what you're interested in learning about. The more questions you ask, the more I'm going to be able to fill the needs here on the air. Okay, so today we're talking about pawpaw. And hopefully I'll recognize the call when it comes in. It's supposed to beep. So please call. I'd love to converse about this with you. So how about if I give you about 10, 15 minutes on pawpaw, and then please start calling. Pawpaw was discovered in Dr. Jerry McLaughlin's search for an herbal remedy for cancer. He told me one morning at breakfast when we were traveling together to introduce this product to the country that that he had lost his sister to cancer when she was in her 40s. And he'd encouraged her, of course, to do everything that modern medicine has to offer, but he watched her die a very excruciating slow death. Actually, it wasn't that slow. And he committed himself as the head of pharmacognosy at Purdue University to find a cure for cancer that is a natural cure. So he got 4,000 different specimens of plants into a warehouse, and they started assaying those plants and determining which of those showed promise in working with tumors and tumor growth. After about plant number 2,000, he hit on pawpaw. And mind you, he was getting money from the National Cancer Institute, and from he was writing grants continually to fund these projects. He used $5 million from the National Cancer Institute in the process. This is very, very upstanding research. He headed several PhD candidates committees, and all of those PhD candidates who came through the School of Pharmacognosy at Purdue during these years contributed pieces of research toward looking for this herbal remedy. Okay, so at number 2,000, he hit on pawpaw, which was growing right outside his window, he said. And it's commonly known as Indiana banana. And, of course, Purdue is in Indianapolis area, and they grow wild there. I grew up with pawpaw in the fence rows at the farm at home, and never thought twice about them. There's these little 6-inch long green things that you eat in the fall, and you eat them because they're there. So he discovered that these had a very anti-tumor effect. Now, in the process of this research, he also discovered that it is apparently not harmful to healthy cells. He discovered that there were, let me get these words right, over 50 of the long-chain fatty acids called anonaceous acetogenins, if you need the official terminology, And what those do is to slow and stop the production of cell energy in cells by blocking the production of ATP. And what they do, basically, the pawpaw convinces the cell to commit suicide. And it's extremely effective. He showed us a study on the wall about on the second go-round. It was 800 times more effective than chemotherapy on the second time with cancer. Now, all this research got gathered up and taken back to the American Cancer Institute, and he told me that he was very disappointed at their response. They were not interested because it hadn't occurred in their labs, he said. Now, he's training researchers who were later placed all over the country in the United States in pharmaceutical companies. They are the very people who run the research departments of the pharmaceuticals. He went to them and tried to sell this idea to the pharmaceuticals, and they could not imitate 50 long-chain fatty acids in a synthetic substance and patent it, so they were also not interested. He came away very disillusioned that here he'd spent all of these years researching and trying to find a natural remedy for cancer, and it was turned away by all of the major people in the country. Now, finally, he found a match in Nature's Sunshine. They're a company that is committed to using all-natural products. They're out of Utah. And he went on board with them as the head of their research and development for the last 3 years of his career. And one of his former graduate students is the head of that department now. And while he was there, we then introduced pawpaw through Nature's Sunshine to the United States and the world, I guess. Now, some of the things that he found, too, is when he was looking at whether it's dangerous at all, whenever you work with a drug and do the research on it, you go through toxicity level tests. And what he found was that they could not kill the dogs. But the way they normally do that in testing a drug is to double the dose and feed it to the dogs and double the dose again and feed it to them until the dogs die. And that's literally how you find the toxic levels of a drug. They couldn't kill the dogs. They would throw up before they became overloaded with toxicity. And that's something about pawpaw. If you eat too much of it, you'll throw up. There's just something in it that just says, okay, enough, throw it out. So it's virtually impossible to overdose on it. It doesn't damage healthy cells. As I said before, it's 800 times more effective in the second go-around with chemotherapy than any other chemotherapy out there. See, when you kill off the cancer cell the first time with a chemotherapy, you leave maybe two or three little cells in there that replicate then, and 2 or 3 years later you have another cancer that's occurred. And that's based on the previous cell that has become immune to the chemotherapy. And so chemotherapy on the second go-round is rarely effective. But this is 800 times effective, more effective on the second go-round. I used to go to a doctor in Dublin, Ohio, Dr. Cates, and he had a sign right on his desk that said, if you're taking chemotherapy, we'll help you to a more peaceful death, but if you are not, we might be able to save your life, basically. So you have to understand that chemotherapy is damaging in itself. Chemotherapy and radiation cause damage, and according to Dr. McLaughlin in his talks that he was giving, they can actually cause cancer. So you might have a cancer in one part of your body 1 year, and then 3 or 4 years later you have a different cancer, and that can be literally because of the chemotherapy from the last go-around. So he was really delighted, and I hope you're out there, Dr. McLaughlin, to hear this, to be able to give pawpaw to the planet. And I was thrilled to death to be able to pick his brains while we were touring and doing that. Now, part of my job while we were traveling, he presented the research that he did on pawpaw, and I talked about what else you need to do if you have cancer or, as he put it, bad cells. You see, even when we were talking about this, we couldn't use the C word, and I probably shouldn't be using it here, because no one's allowed to cure that. And even though he was doing research on bad cells, he was not allowed to say it out loud. So it was my job to do that. And I talked about what you would do around the pawpaw to promote better immune system health and just generally improve a bad condition like that. So number one, I recommend that everybody, first of all, recognize that you want to starve the enemy and feed the good cells. So first and foremost, you stop feeding the enemy, all right? And the number one problem, the number one thing is white sugar. Just leave it out. If you want to prevent or deal with any cancer you have, stop eating white sugar. White sugar feeds cancer cells. So according to Dr. McLaughlin, one evening while we were out there, I believe we were in Chicago that night, somebody asked about that, and he said, it's a well-known fact that a cancer cell uses 17 times the glucose of a normal cell. And so you're feeding the enemy if you eat sweets while you have cancer. Now, the next thing that I have found over the years is that a person needs to keep their bowel cleansed. I had heard a speaker one time a long time ago, a Tom Mathers from upstate New York. He said that 85% of cancer begins in the colon. It's a matter of toxic levels that need, the toxins need to go somewhere. They need to be put somewhere. And your body will kind of build a garbage bag for it and stuff those toxins in the tumor. That's the simplification of the situation. But he said that the bowel needs to be worked on every time. And I have found in my experience that the clients that I work with who stop the sugar and keep the bowel wide open are the ones who beat the odds. And then add the pawpaw to the situation, and things get much better. Now, also, and I'm thinking I should tell you this, certain cleanses, bowel cleanses, you know, whatever products you're used to using, use them and make sure you're getting 3 to 4 solid bowel movements a day. That's how you really work with a bowel. You might find colon therapy. Find someone who does colon therapy and just really work with that. Also, in connection with that, you want to make certain that you're digesting your food well. So enzymes would become extremely important. Enzymes break down the nutrients. They're not available to us in our food simply because we don't eat live foods. The minute we cook a food, the enzymes dissipate. And the fresh raw foods that we buy in the grocery store have been picked for 2 weeks before we eat them. And the minute you pick food, you start to lose enzymes. So this would be one time when you would really want to focus on taking some enzymes to make sure that your nutrients are available throughout your system. Then I would also say do something specific to stimulate the immune system. And one product that we have available through Nature Sunshine is called Immune Stimulator. It has miyatake, shiitake, and reiki mushrooms all in one bottle. And colostrum's in there as well. So it's a really good immune booster. Gets the T cells up and running, and they go out there and declare war. Another thing that I always add is something to support the area of the body that's affected. So if it's in the bladder, you would want to do some herbs that would support the bladder. I'm thinking there's a combination called urinary maintenance I would think about for that. If it's in the pancreas, there's a combination of herbs that help to support the pancreas as well. And these come from centuries of people's use, long-term research in that respect. And then they've been put to the test in modern times as well. When you run into the argument that there isn't enough research for an herb to work, please, please take another look. We don't need big, expensive, double-blind studies to show that something is effective. We need to know that it works for you, for one thing. And if it works for you, it might work for somebody else. And it's been passed along like that. I just was reading something on the Internet about Eyebright in Canada, that with Codex coming into Canada, they're doing things like banning certain herbs from the shelves because they sound like they might be good for something, like Eyebright might be good for the eyes, so they're not letting it be called its name. Now, the reason it was named Eyebright in the first place was that somebody noticed that it helps the eyes. And that's why it was called that. So here we are now in modern times banning an herb from being put on a shelf simply because it sounds like it might do something for you. Trust it. And if we reach a point where we have to resort to picking pawpaws in the fields and in the woods and so forth, then so be it. We'll get back to doing that. Okay, now another item that I would add to a program for building the immune system around this bad cell issue would be proteolytic acid. It's also known as protease. And protease is a digestive enzyme that specifically breaks up proteins. Now, when you have a bad cell, you have a protein sheath around it. That's true of virus and bacteria as well. And the protease are going to gobble that up. So what you want to do is take your regular enzymes with your meals to break up your proteins and carbohydrates and everything within a meal, and then take protease, maybe two every hour or so throughout the day. It's not going to hurt anything, and what it does is go out through the small intestine and break up the proteins that are in the bloodstream. We got that information from a woman whose father had colon cancer, and he was going downhill. She was using lots of herbs with him. They were also doing chemotherapy with him because he had a fast-growing cancer. And then she did some research and found out about proteolytic acid, added that to his program, and gave him quite a bit of it. And in, you know, a matter of weeks, he turned around one morning and started forward. He did not die of cancer either. He passed away much later on at an older age. So it really worked for that. So that's kind of how I would surround an immune system situation that has gone to the point of bad cells. Now, I want to mention also, there's a little bit more on that. pH balancing is another thing that you want to look at when you have an immune system that's off. You can get pH paper at the drugstore. Nature Sunshine sells it too. A lot of herb companies do because they've begun to recognize the importance of keeping your pH balanced. And when you're over acid, you're in a condition that will kind of develop. It's a condition where you're open to virus, bad cells, yeast, and that sort of thing occurring. Let me give you a little background on pH, and maybe take about 5 minutes to do that, and then we'll come back to pawpaw too, because there's some other things that it does. When the fellow who put pH together, he was an MD, as I understood it, and he was able to convince the farming community to look at pH. Therefore, we check the pH of our soils around here, and if it's too acid, we put lime on it. Now, lime is a form of calcium. Remember that, because in the human body, calcium also sweetens, okay, or restores your pH levels back to normal. Now, in a garden, when your pH level is correct in the soil, then your plants can reach into the soil and pull minerals up. And then they become healthier, and then the weeds don't grow because the healthy plants are taking up the space. Okay, so that's how it promotes health in the garden. And in the human being, when the pH is correct, we can also take up minerals. I believe it was Wendell Whitman did a talk one time that I heard, and he was talking about how the pH has to be nearly perfect for the human body to take up iodine, which, of course, is extremely important for the thyroid. So correcting the pH will generally improve your health tremendously. Now, another place where we check pH is in the swimming pool. Those of you who have hot tubs or even ponds know that if the pH is off, your water body will grow algae on it. And when our pH is off, you have to understand we're 70% water, and we're like this bag of water. And the skin is the bag, and you're holding a farm pond in there, in a sense. It kind of gives new meaning to the word scumbag, I guess, to some people. But the human form of pond scum would be virus, bacteria, yeast, cancer cells. And by correcting the pH in the water, if you've ever done this with a pond or body of water, you know that as soon as that pH is corrected overnight, all the scum drops out of the water. And the same is true of us. So it behooves you to start looking at pH balancing long before you become a diabetic. Once you're a diabetic, they'll start having you check your pH, but really start looking at it now. And what you're looking for is 6.5 saliva pH, and in the morning, you should probably have a more acid urine saliva, and in the evening, perhaps more alkaline. But in the morning, you want to know that you're dumping acids out the system if you're eating acid foods. Now, what are acid-producing foods? Sugar, wheat, dairy, beer, soft drinks, peanuts, NutraSweet, Equal, Sweet and Low, those are the worst. Beef, shellfish, it sounds like the Ohio diet to me. So I talk about pH a lot with my clients here. We work with a food chart here, and on the other end, the most alkalizing foods are things like lemons, and I know that's odd because lemons you'd think would be acid, but they're very alkalizing. Squeeze a teaspoon of lemon in your water, and that will help to alkalize the water and reduce the effect that the chlorine would have on you. Watermelon is extremely alkalizing. Limes, grapefruit, mangoes, papayas, and you can go to a sweetener called stevia, which is very alkalizing and would be my choice against white sugar any day. And stay away from the NutraSweet, Equal, Sweet and Low, those things. They are very acid-producing. Here are some more alkalizing foods. Asparagus, onions, vegetable juices, parsley, raw spinach, broccoli, garlic, herb teas, maple syrup, rice syrup, celery, lettuce, zucchini, sweet potatoes, almonds are the nuts of choice. Peanuts and walnuts go toward the more acidic side, but they're not bad foods. It's just that you have to balance your acid foods with your alkalizing foods. About 20% on the acid side, 80% on the alkalizing side. But check your pH, and that'll tell you whether it's working for you or not. And that's another way to look for foods that are bothering you, too. A lot of people have problems with wheat and dairy as well, and you can check your pH, eat the food, a half an hour later check your pH again, and if it goes away from the 6.5 in the middle, you know you've got a problem with that food. It's affecting you. I heard Dr. Jensen, who's the father of iridology, talk just before he passed away several years ago, and he was saying that you'll use up more calcium in your body dealing with cow's milk than you'll ever get from it. I was puzzled by that statement, but I had just found out I was allergic to dairy. It was causing me to have hives all over my backside. I don't like to scratch there in public. So I had stopped eating cow's milk. I do fine with goat's milk. I do all right with soy milk on occasion. I just don't drink much of it. And I have been telling people since then to look and see if you have a problem with cow's milk as well. It's a very common allergen. But Dr. Jensen's comment on it was that a cow has four stomachs to digest its mother's milk, and we don't. He said over the age of 16, it's very difficult for a human being to digest it. So if you are going to indulge in dairy, please do so with lots of enzymes. You'll be in much better shape. Now, I discovered this wonderful secret. When I stopped eating wheat, sugar, and dairy, which all make me too acid, I lost weight. I dropped about 35 pounds in no more than 3 months. It was just really impressive. And it has happened time and again for other people as well. So look at this pH balancing thing for weight loss as well. Okay, now I wanted to go back and talk about some more things that pawpaw does. One of the other things that it is very effective at is getting rid of parasites. So we have it in a product called Paracleanse with Pawpaw. And parasites, you know, are a lot more common than we like to think of in the United States. We tend to think that since we're not a third world country, we don't have parasites in our guts, but it's really very common here. If you go barefoot at all, or you have animals in your house, small children, you probably have parasites in the house. So what you need to do to get rid of them is to do a parasite cleanse for at least a week and a half on and a week off, four times. Or just keep going with a parasite cleanse for two or three months, something like that, until you get rid of it. Because parasites have parasites, and then they lay eggs, and you have to catch those eggs too. So it's a real challenge to stay parasite free. But we've had all kinds of gory stories about parasites. I won't go into those. But parasites, you need to just be aware that it's very possible, especially if you have a protruding belly. If you're wondering where that belly came from, it could be a tapeworm. You never know. So try a parasite cleanse with pawpaw. Now, there's another parasite that we all know about, and that's concerning our dogs. Heartworm is a parasite that can be very damaging to animals. And I'm not sure, but what we ought to consider the possibility of parasites being in some of our organs for humans as well. Ivermectin is, of course, the drug that people use for heartworm. The pawpaw was tested by the drug company that puts out ivermectin when Dr. McLaughlin was working with his research on pawpaw. And they discovered that it is almost as effective as ivermectin for heartworm. So that gives it one more thing that it can do. The last and, to me, the most impressive thing that it does is to get rid of head lice. And we had actually a shampoo called head lice shampoo available through Nature Sunshine for a while, but people don't want to have a bottle with that name on it in their bathroom for other people to see, I guess. And we didn't really have any head lice outbreaks at that point. But at the moment, what I do is I'll take about 10 capsules of the pawpaw and break them open into a dish, pour some alcohol over it to denature it, just kind of break down those molecules, and then mix that with a good head shampoo, just whatever you like. And it has been extremely effective. Every time we have tried it on head lice, we have had great results with it, to the point where one shampoo works better than most everything else that is available over the counter. Many a kid who has had to wash their hair in really dreadful chemicals, that some of those head lice shampoos are really very damaging. And you have to realize, too, that any kind of chemical that touches the skin actually goes into the body. The FDA does not consider the skin an open organ, and yet we turn around and deliver estrogen patches on the skin and nicotine patches, and we don't recognize that all the things that we're putting on our skin, like skin lotions and so forth, are also chemicals that can damage us. So we want to be real careful what we do put on our skin. And I heard about one woman one time whose problem turned out to be the dryer sheet. It was a chemical that was mixing with her clothes, touching her skin, and then her liver had to deal with it. And it was just the last straw, I guess, for her. So even detergents and anything that touches the skin can be damaging, and can actually lead back around to the original topic of our discussion today, which is bad cell situations. Because what will happen is when your body goes downhill, when you've been overexposed to chemicals or tobacco smoke or just all kinds of other chemicals that we're breathing in. If you work in a hairdresser shop, imagine the fumes from the fingernails being worked on and the hair dye and all that. That person needs to work on their liver and make sure that they're not poisoning themselves. One of the things you can do if you do work in a lot of paint fumes or chemicals like that is occasionally take a bottle of milk thistle and take the whole thing, over time, and that will help the liver to repair itself. If you know the plant out in the ecological scheme of things, you know that it's very difficult to kill off a thistle because it really does it deals with chemicals rather well and won't die when you spray it with a chemical, just like dandelion is really resistant. Both of those plants tend to be very good for the liver, which deals with all that poison. Okay, so I want to mention, too, that pawpaw is effective against fleas. If you have a cat or a dog, I know my daughter had just adopted a little teeny kitten with fleas, and you don't want to put a flea collar on a tiny little kitten like that. I have seen them actually die from using flea collars. So what you do is just make a shampoo with the pawpaw as well and wash the animal with that. Or you could mix up a spray bottle and spray it on them, and that will also help. Years ago I had heard that pennyroyal would help with fleas, and I had a lady came out and she asked what to do about the fleas for her cat. And I went outside, I was just selling plants at that point, And I said, well, Pennyroyal is supposed to help, but I'm not sure how to apply it. So we were trying to think of ways to smush it through a, you know, a blender and make a spray with it and spray it on the cat. And I watched as one of my own cats went over and laid down in a patch of Pennyroyal and rolled in it. And I realized once again that animals have a real, they know what's good for them. That's one of the ways that we've learned what to use is by watching animals. In fact, hawthorn is something that's extremely good for toning a heart muscle. And we learned that from watching horses who prefer after a hard run to find some hawthorn berries and nibble those. And it helps them to bring their heart rate back in a normal range. And then we learn it from them. Another thing that pawpaw does is it helps with fungus. So anytime you have something like a ringworm or any type of fungus, even toenail fungus, those are fungal situations, and the pawpaw is extremely effective on that. I have started blending a combination of Podiarco lotion, and Podiarco is a bark from a tree that you will never find fungus around. There won't be mushrooms. Podiarco just doesn't allow fungus around it. So the Podiarco is a really good herb to use. And I use the Podiarco lotion and mix pawpaw right into it for things like ringworm. Skin cancer, that's an excellent way to work with skin cancer as well. And acne, folks, just, you know, put some pawpaw into that same lotion and apply it for acne as well. It's just an amazing product. I know when Dr. McLaughlin first introduced it, he put a warning on it, which has been kind of confusing to people. We have done some research since. Dr. Kellerman did a study Nature Sunshine. What it was he was suggesting to people that they not use antioxidants along with the pawpaw, and that they not use CoQ10, thyroid activator, which would be a seaweed and so forth. And his reasoning at the time, he was kind of going on the assumption that that when doctors give you chemotherapy, they also recommend that same protocol, not to use antioxidants with a chemo. And their reasoning is that you'll slow or reduce the effect of the chemotherapy. So he was going on that same assumption, is what he told me. And then later, Dr. Kellerman has done a study, and he found, actually, that the opposite is true, that by using antioxidants, like Tygo is a blend of 11 different juices with mangosteen, you know, find yourself a really good healthy juice drink and utilize that, and that raises the antioxidant levels. It actually improves the performance of pawpaw. It doesn't make it worse. It improves it. So, you know, if you read anything about, you know, avoid certain things with pawpaw, you can now ignore that. Take it with anything else you want to. It's perfectly safe, and there won't be any bad effects from cancer. Now, I'd like to say right now, it's about 35 after the hour, please call. We'd love to have questions here. The number is 877-876-5227, and if you're in Canada, it's 888-810-8322. And the international website is 530-876-3222. My website or my email address is ngingrich@cinci.rr.com. And I'd really appreciate some conversation to find out what it is you'd like to know about. I've kind of wrapped up everything I wanted to say about pH and pawpaw, and hopefully I'll recognize a beep in. Not sure. Okay. There's one other area that I kind of like to get into this evening. Dr. Rodier years ago did a class for us, and he called this situation Syndrome X. Now, I noticed the last time I heard him speak that he's the name has changed. There's a different name for this now. But Syndrome X, as described at the time, was what he called the underlying cause of all illness. And what it is irritation or inflammation. at the cellular level. And I know you've all noticed that in health issues and so forth, they talk about inflammation a great deal as being the root cause of things. So what he explained to us is that it works this way. First of all, look at the cells in the right along the bloodstream. Imagine a cell right at the edge and peeking out into a major artery or vein within your body. He said, just look at those cells to start with. Okay, so along comes insulin through the bloodstream, and it's knocking on the door of all these little cells as we go along. And it has a difficult time getting in because the sugar you ate, the white sugar you ate, has gummed up the works and thrown away the key. I mean, you think about it. White sugar is sticky, right? And it gets along the bloodstream, and it gets sticky. And it gloms on there, and no insulin is going in. Now, you may have, if you're diabetic or heard, any talks about diabetes, you've heard the term insulin resistance. This is exactly the same thing. Insulin resistance, he said, then, is at the base of all illness. Now, let's go a little further with this. As the insulin comes along knocking on all the doors, and it can't get in because the key's gone, because sugar gummed up the works, it goes all along, and then finally this little cell is starving to death. So it sends an SOS out the back door and up to the brain, and the pituitary up in the brain is in charge of this orchestra that is the endocrine system. And the pituitary says, wait, all these cells, we've got billions down here, are telling me they're starving. We've got to get the insulin going. So he sends a message down to pancreas and says, let's get on the ball. Let's get some insulin up here. Get all these cells fed. Let's go. So the pancreas has been dealing with your pop and coffee and chewing gum and sugar and all day long, 13, 14 hits of this high blood sugar. So it's already worn out. And then here comes the message from the pituitary saying, let's get it together and get some insulin out there. So the pancreas will start to over-insulinize. It's called hyperinsulinization. And it starts to shove all this insulin out into the system. And now you've got 40 times the insulin banging on all these little doors as you go through the bloodstream. And he said it's a simple matter of friction. That rubbing hard on those cell walls will cause swelling, heat, inflammation, and pain. Now, if you've got cells swelling into the bloodstream, you'll have less space for the blood. It's a simple physical matter there. And he said the first drug that you get when you go to the doctor is going to be a blood pressure medication. And this is why. The next thing that would be up would be the cholesterol medication. And the cholesterol comes in because with all of that irritation in your bloodstream, the cholesterol is called out to lay itself down like a bandage on all that irritated cell wall in the bloodstream and just soothe all that irritation. It actually has a job to do there. And when you eat sugar, you call that up. And what I took away from Dr. Rodier's talk was that sugar's the culprit much more than fats are. And I will say, too, that you want to watch your cholesterol levels the other way as well. As going too high, they can go too low as well. And the literature that's actually out there now is not recommending that you go as low as your doctor is saying. We don't want it under 175. Your total cholesterol should be at least 175. Otherwise, you can't make hormones. So just consider that as that maybe there's more to it than, you know, just that cholesterol is bad. Okay, so cholesterol comes out, lays itself down on the bloodstream, and then you're on Lipitor. The next thing that happens is you start to get overweight because the cells are not being fed regularly, and you'll start putting on fluffy stuff. It's called fat. The next thing that happens then is the pancreas can't keep up that pace, and it rolls over dead. And you have achieved the American dream of diabetes. I'm sorry. 1 in 8, I believe it is, Americans have diabetes. And we act as though it were something like lightning striking us, as though it were an absolutely random act of unkindness from the universe. We create that by eating the wrong foods. Now, at this point, someone in the crowd said, well, why do we see so much trouble with dairy and wheat again? And he said that, in his opinion, they also turn to the wrong sugars. But they irritate the cell walls like that. And then someone asked about pH, and he said, yes, this is when you're acid. In other words, you're inflamed when you're over acid as well. And the pH fits right in with this whole thought process of syndrome X, or the underlying reason for all illness or inflammation. You're inflamed when you're over acid. All right. And the number one thing you do for that is enzymes. Take your enzymes. Get your nutrients available. That'll start to bring the acid levels down. Lay off the white sugar. It is not the fourth food group. Now I sound like I'm preaching. But in America, especially Ohio, where we have all these lovely church dinners where they bring the rhubarb pie and cherry pie, and this last month it was blackberry pie, I'm really trying to get people to learn to sweeten with stevia. You can cook with it. A quarter of a teaspoon is equivalent to one cup of sugar. And that will help to move you away from the sugars that really irritate and get everything going. Let's see. He also said that, oh, I know. Someone asked then, what are the correct sugars? And stevia, as I've just mentioned, is one that will actually reverse this whole process. And he said noni juice is the most complete fruit juice. And it's something that he said, I don't let my feet hit the floor in the morning without an ounce of noni juice first. Now, noni is a fruit that grows in the islands. I'm thinking it's Fiji. It could be Tahiti. It's way over there. Y'all who have it, you're lucky. On those islands where they have noni juice, they don't use anything else. That's all you need to heal just about anything. And I could not figure out, when they started importing it, I couldn't figure out how one fruit juice could help everything. But if it is what reduces inflammation, that begins to make sense, because that's at the root of every problem. So take your noni juice and take a chromium every day if you really have a sweet tooth. One of the reasons that we crave sugar is that we're looking for chromium, which is necessary to make insulin. And chromium, our bodies know, is in sugar cane. But by the time they reduce sugar cane down, refine it down to white sugar, the chromium's gone. So what happens is we crave sugar looking for chromium. We eat the sugar, and it causes our blood sugar to go up, which means that we need more chromium to make more insulin, so we go get more sugar again. And then we're in this catch-22 where we just can't quit eating. Have you ever noticed you go to the church dinner and you're going to just have one piece of pie, and about a half an hour later you discover you've tasted every piece of dessert on that table? That's how sugar gets hold of you. And in the book Sugar Blues, I'd really recommend getting a hold of that. It's an old paperback book. I read it years ago. But it actually says that it's harder to stop a sugar habit than it is to stop a heroin addict addiction. It's a serious addiction. And in the United States, we seem to think that sugar is the fourth food group, as I said. And there is no USRDA for sugar. There simply is none. Now, that brings me to the topic of USRDAs. I've got some older folks who I work with, and they're worried about taking a vitamin or a supplement that would throw them into over that amount. The USRDA is not a recommended amount. It's the amount that keeps you from getting scurvy or from getting rickets, and it's a minimal amount. You can take a whole lot more of your nutrients and don't worry about it. Your body will flush out anything that's water soluble that you're not using. And if it's something that's kind of valuable like gold, it'll store it in the vault somewhere and save it for a rainy day when you need it. So don't worry about overdoing it. And of course, I've heard the criticism that all you're doing is creating expensive urine when you take lots and lots of supplements. But you may consider it that, but really, it's just giving your body the nutrients that it needs to do what it needs to do. So don't worry about taking more than the USRDA of most things. I'd keep it down on the vitamin A, and vitamin E is actually very good for your heart, but you don't want to suddenly start taking a lot of them. You want to start with 1 400 IU, then go to maybe 2 or 3. Any more than that, and you won't be using much more than that. So some people take up to four of those 400 IUs a day, but that's plenty. Okay, so that's the story on Syndrome X, or the root of all illness there. And we are still looking for questions. If anybody'd like to call in, the number is 1-877-876-5227. In Canada, you can call 888-810-8322. And if you're on the international web, it's 530-876-3222. Okay, we have just a few more minutes left. I do know that internationally, populations have maintained their knowledge of herbs for a long time. In the United States where we are, we're just beginning to rediscover what has been known by mankind all along. I'm thinking about a talk that Stephen Horn did one time. He was telling us about a doctor who went into a tribal situation, and this medicine man was going to answer questions for him. And the doctor said, how do you deal with a heart attack here? And the medicine man just didn't know what he was talking about. And finally the doctor clutched his chest and he fell to the ground, and the medicine man got what he was talking about. He said, oh, but that's not something that we have to worry about. That's so rare. Oh, okay. So the American doctor said, well, what do you do about cancer? And again, he couldn't be understood. The medicine man didn't know what he meant. And finally he made it understood. And he said, oh, but that's so rare. We need not concern ourselves with that. And then he went on with some other illnesses. And finally he said, how do you people die? I don't understand. You don't have these major illnesses. And the medicine man said, well, we say goodbye to our family and friends, and we go to sleep. So that's the natural way to go. We have reached a point in our culture where we think that all of the illnesses that we have are a part of life. They're not necessary. They're not necessarily a part of what we have to experience. I'm trying to think what the number one illness is. When I was teaching this 4 or 5 years ago, I saw, it was strokes and heart disease, and then there was cancer and lung disease. And then after that was 140,000 deaths per year due to drug use. And that was not mistakes, and it wasn't even street drugs. This was just the use of drugs as documented in doctor's offices. At that point, drug use was actually the fourth leading cause of death in this country. Now, I just read an article not too long ago that said that we now have 800,000 deaths per year in this country that we can attribute to drug use and mistakes. And we're starting to see that in the news now. So that would place it far and away the number one leading cause of death. So we really need to start looking at how to maintain our health, how to work with our bodies instead of, as one friend of mine put it, using them as a pull toy for our mind. You know, we have a tendency to just drag it along and make it do everything we need it to do and stay up late and get up early and never mind about eating right. You know, you'll get by today. So we put our bodies through a great deal of stress and don't really take them into consideration as part of the team that, you know, we are. I guess that's how I got started in looking at health and natural remedies. And I'm not sure whether I've mentioned on the show before, my husband has been through cancer. He's also had heart disease. These are the number one and number two leading causes of death besides drug use. The cancer was 23 years ago now. It was a malignant melanoma, and it was already in his lymph system. So any of you out there who know anything about cancers know that that was an impossible one to cure. And he has had no recurrence. He had actually a lump of almost the size of a small walnut peel. Okay, so it was a pretty decent lump in there. And we worked with Dr. James, who is the Cancer Institute is named after here in Columbus. And he told Norman to use vitamin A. And, of course, since then we've heard ugly rumors about how vitamin A causes cancer. I just can't believe that. It worked too well for him. He also had heart disease in 1994, so that's been 12 years ago. He had congestive heart failure. He had a heart that was twice the size it should have been. And he was in the hospital for 11 days while they were getting him used to the drugs that he needed to be on. And he was taking Coumadin, which, of course, is the same thing as rat poison, for those of you who know anything about that drug, which causes you to internally hemorrhage and die. That's how it works on the rats. Anybody with any heart problems in this country has Coumadin to take. That's part of the regular routine. I just want to mention that I know that in Japan, they have a tendency to lead from the naturopathic side of things, and every heart patient there gets CoQ10 first, and then if they still need it, they go to drugs. But in this country, we work the other direction. We lead with the drugs and then give the nutrients, or the client, basically, or the patient is the person who decides to take something like a supplement. And then you need to be able to talk your doctor into it or have conversation with him about it so he knows what's going on without letting him tell you not to take them. We had a conversation with Norman's doctor one time about CoQ10. We had read a book called The Miracle Enzyme CoQ10, which I highly recommend, while he was in the hospital. And it said in there that they autopsied healthy hearts and unhealthy hearts. And the healthy hearts had lots of CoQ10, and the unhealthy hearts didn't have any. That was very simple research. It's plain research, but that works for me. I could see it. I mentioned it to the doctor. I said, now, after he told him the drugs he would take, I said, now, will it hurt anything if he takes CoQ10? And the doctor said, oh, it's just a supplement. You're only wasting your money. I said, no, I didn't ask you that. You sent a social worker in here to tell me to go home and sell everything I owned. So don't talk to me about $65. I'm not interested in that. I said, I just asked you if it would hurt anything. Because according to this book, it really might help. So he just poo-pooed it. We went ahead and tried it. And within 4 months' time, he was back to normal size and normal function. And he had been down to an 18% capacity for beat. At 16, they were going to put him on a heart transplant list. And normal is 50 to 55. Within 4 months, he was at 45% in both chambers of his heart. And a year later, they did the same test, and he was running 55 in one chamber. Yeah, 50 and 55. And it was just a remarkable turnaround. Later, we saw a 60 Minutes program, which declared that there was research which was showing that CoQ10 just might help to reduce the size of an enlarged heart. So, you know, we just happened to be kind of on the leading edge of that. But the research is out there. It's just a matter of reading it and reading it with some intelligence and understanding that there are powers in the world who would prefer that we did not take supplements, that we would be become less likely to feed into the situation of spending all of our excess funding on drugs. So actually, our family's been pretty much drug-free for 20 years or so. I haven't taken any of those particular things. I see that our time is up, and I really thank all of you who listened. Please, please, please send me some questions. It's at ngingrich, G-I-N-G-E-R-I-C-H, at cincy.rr.com, and I'd be glad to answer those in future shows. Thank you all very much for listening, and good night. Bye.